Antikapitarubhyascha Kripasindhu Bhaivacha Titanam Pavinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We're in the first chapter of the pastime of the story of Dhruva Maharaj, where Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. That's the title of the chapter, chapter 8 in the fourth canto. Dhruva Maharaj was a very young boy, and he was a king, the king's son. He was maybe 5 years old or so. And his father had two wives. His father's name was Uttanapad. And his Dhruva Maharaj's mother's name was Suniti. And Suniti was the elder and least favored wife of the king, Uttanapad. And Uttanapad's other wife, Saruchi, had a second son, had a son whose name was Uttam. So one day, Uttam and Dhruva were playing, quite naturally. And they were in the throne room, and Uttam climbed upon the lap of his father. And the boy, Dhruva Maharaj, also tried to climb on the lap, naturally. And his stepmother, Saruchi, stopped him, and saying, "No, you can't sit upon the lap of your father, you cannot sit upon the throne. This is not your position. Even though you are the son of the king, you have one flaw, one fault, and that is you were not born within my womb. So therefore, if you want to..." So very, just talking to a young boy like this, how cutting, how cruel, how heartless. "Therefore," she said, "if you want to sit upon the throne," because sitting upon the throne means sitting upon the lap of the king is sitting upon the throne, and she was saying something somewhat metaphorical as well. "If you wish to sit upon the lap of the sit upon the throne, in other words, if you wish to one day become king, this is what you'll have to do." And she was speaking again very more or less sarcastically, "that you'll have to please the Supreme Lord, because by pleasing God anything is possible. So you have to please God if you want to sit upon the throne. And then," as if that's not enough, "and then you will have to die. And then take birth in my womb. And then you can sit upon the throne." In other words, not even pleasing God is sufficient. So she spoke like this to the young boy, and this boy was not an ordinary boy. He was the son of a king. And he possessed a very, very strong and heavy character and personality, and very Kshatriya-like, warlike, with great heroism, determination, and a specific kind of pride, because warriors cannot be humble in the same way that brahmanas or sages can be humble. Warriors have to, someone challenges them, they have to rise to the occasion. "If you have done this, then we will fight until the death," something like that. This is the warrior spirit. So Dhruva Maharaj, even though a young boy, possessed that spirit. So when insulted by his mother, he felt as if his heart was pierced by a spear. And he walked out of the storm crying, out of the throne room, And he saw that this was said in the presence of his father, and his father didn't even had heard it and didn't even protest. In other words, he agreed. He was so much under the control of Suruchi that he agreed. He accepted it. So Dhruvaraj ran out of the throne room crying. He went to his actual mother, Suniti, crying and crying and crying. And she couldn't understand what had happened because he couldn't calm down enough to speak. And the residents of the palace, those who were in the retinue in the throne room, they saw what had happened and they went and told Suniti that Suruchi had spoken so harshly to Dhruva, and therefore he was so insulted. And she tried to calm him down. And she told him, the first thing she told him is, even though someone has done you harm, do not wish harm to them. And there's, of course, a very important lesson in that for all of us. Do not wish harm to others. And we can say that it is not good to wish harm to others, and inherently everyone knows that. But Suniti gave a reason for it as well, and it's a very practical reason. Other than wishing harm to others is envious, and it shows a lack of devotion on one's own part. But aside from that, Suniti said that if you wish harm for others, you yourself will have to suffer from that you wish upon others. This is, of course, a very wonderful instruction, not to wish harm to others, be the well-wisher of everyone. This is a very important instruction, but yet it's still not the essence of what Suniti told her son Dhruva. She told him that although it is very painful for you to understand this, and painful for me as well, what Suruchi has said is correct. That if you wish to be soothed of heart, and if that entails sitting on the throne or whatsoever, if you wish to sit on the throne, or if you wish help, there is only one person who can help you, and that is the Lord. You have come to me, she said, crying with a pierced heart. And in this world, more or less everyone's heart is pierced by one type of a spear or another. That is something that everyone has in common in this world. Everyone is scarred due to the darts and spears that we've somehow have been targeted, or somehow or another landed, whether they've been targeted or not, in our hearts. Everyone has that. This is the suffering of humanity is common to everyone. So therefore the instruction is good as well. So she said, if you've come to me, your mother, to have your heart soothed, but you should go to Krishna, the Supreme Lord, because he is more soothing, he has more power to soothe than hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mothers. So go to him. What Suruchi has said is correct. You go to him. You have to find him, and he can satisfy you. He is all powerful. Because after all, what powers do we have in this world to satisfy another? Ultimately, we can pat them on the head, we can give them a lolly, or we can give them this or that, but what power do we really have to satisfy another? We can't right the wrongs. We cannot soothe the pains truly. So, Suniti said, you go and find the Lord. He will give you shelter. So Dhruva Maharaj took that very seriously, even though a young boy. He said, where can I find him? And Suniti said that great sages, when they want to find the Lord, they go to the forest. And Prabhupada, in a very wonderful purport there, says the Vaishnavas, they don't go to any forest, but they go to the forest of Vrindavan. Van means forest. Vrindavan, a forest of Vrindavan, Vrindadevi. A place where Krishna grew up and had so many pastimes, that holy place, you go, that is the place where devotees go to take shelter, to attain their heart's desire. Krishna's place. So Dhruva Maharaj, even again only a young boy, he just immediately left home and went to the forest. Just like there's a wonderful pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita where the author Krishnadas Kaviraj explains that one there was some altercation in his home. He lived in a village in Bengal, and somehow there was some dispute in his home, and he had to chastise his brother, and he had defended a servant, Abhiram Thakur, a servant of Nityananda Prabhu, and his brother was a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he did not respect Nityananda. So Krishnadas Kaviraj, he chastised him, and that night Nityananda himself came to him in a dream and told him also, go to Vrindavan, you will achieve all things there. And immediately after seeing Nityananda in the dream, he immediately, when he awoke, immediately, even though it was perhaps the middle of the night, or he didn't pack his bags or anything, he didn't kiss all his relatives goodbye, he immediately started for Vrindavan. There's another story also of one exalted Brahmana who lived in South India, name of Gadadhar Bhatta. And he had read the literature, the books of the Goswamis, of Jiva Goswami, the Satsandavas. And these books had inspired him so much in Krishna consciousness that he wrote Jiva Goswami a letter, who was at that time, Jiva Goswami was in Vrindavan in North India, and he was, and Gadadhar Bhatta was in South India. And he wrote him a letter and told him how much he appreciated and he wanted to give himself to Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami sent a reply. And that reply, one morning, Gadadhar Pandit was out by the village well, brushing his teeth. Gadadhar Bhatta was out by a well, brushing his teeth early one morning. And somehow the messenger came from Jiva Goswami with the letter, saying, Jiva Goswami has received your letter, and he said, come to Vrindavan immediately. So immediately, immediately means immediately. So he never went home. He dropped everything. I assume he rinsed his mouth or whatever, but he just left. You like that idea, don't you? This concept is very inspiring. Sometimes, though, it's easier to leave for the service of God than to stay in one place. Sometimes it's still more difficult. But in any case, Dhruva Maharaj, although a young boy, just left. Now a young boy just leaving home, no support, no nothing, going to the dangerous forests where there are tigers and lions and whatsoever, and elephants and pythons and no kangaroos, though. But he just left for the forest immediately. And when the great sage Narada Muni understood that Dhruva had left for the forest, he decided to show him compassion. And when a sage decides to be compassionate to us, that means that he's inspired by Krishna, by God, because this is the quality of a sage, that he's carrying the mercy of Krishna and he's inspired by Krishna. So Krishna decided to show him some mercy through his devotee Narada Muni. So So Narada Muni, before he began to instruct him, he said, "Dhruva, you're a young boy. Go home. Go home. This practice of yoga in the forest is difficult work. It's rare. Even a mature practiced sage can see the Lord as you desire. And you are just a boy. And why are you there? Because you were insulted by someone? No, don't take these insults seriously. Just go home. And if still in a few years you wish to find God, when you're mature, when you know what is what, then you come again." And he preached to him, actually. You should be equipoised. Don't take these insults so seriously. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says the same thing. You should be equal in happiness and distress. You should treat honor and dishonor as the same. They come and they go. Tams to tikshas svabharata. You have to tolerate them. These are actually true instructions. Good instructions. Practical instructions. But Dhruva Maharaj said no. These instructions may be good. They are good. But they're suitable for someone who is a lot better than I am. I cannot take them. My heart has been pierced by the harsh words of Sri Ruchi. And I want to stay in the forest. And what do I want? I want a kingdom. She said, I won't sit on the throne, but I want a kingdom bigger than my father's, bigger than my grandfather's, Brahma, practically bigger than everything. It was childish, but he was very determined, and he wanted it. And I want to find God, because he is the one who can give me this. Your words are very good, and I apologize that I'm not able to take them. But I want a kingdom. So this is, actually speaking, this isn't a spiritual desire. Obviously wanting a kingdom bigger than, and it's not only not a spiritual desire, it's a childish desire, because how could you have a kingdom bigger than the world or the universe, or bigger than, you know, just like a child wants so many things. He doesn't have the capacity to know what is realizable or what is not realizable. But when Narada Muni saw Dhruva Maharaj's determination, he said, okay, he has that quality, because even if we lack so many, even if we're contaminated with so many desires, if we have so many imperfections, if we have this one quality of determination, Tivrena Bhakti Yoginiya Jeta Purushapara, and it's been explained in the second canto. A very important verse for this. Akama Sarvakama Va Moksha Kamo Daradi. Tivrena Bhakti Yoginiya Jeta Purushapara. That means that whether we akam, we have no desires, sarvakam, or we have, if we're full, stockpiling material wants and needs and desires, moksha kama, or if we just desire to be out of this world, tivrena bhakti yogena, if with great force and determination and power we practice bhakti yogena, bhakti yoga, devotional service to Krishna with great determination, yajeta purusha para, to the Supreme Lord, then all good result will come from that. Because tivrena bhakti yogena means that if we practice devotional service with great force, it will remove everything, every obstacle from our path, like the Ganges flowing swiftly in Gangotri or Gomukh or even Haridwara. Rishikesh, so it's so powerful that it moves boulders, whatever. So similarly, there is no impediment to performing devotional service. So Narada Muni knew this, and he saw that although the boy was immature and he had childish and materialistic desires, he possessed this strong and essential quality for success known as determination. And therefore he began to instruct him. So today we'll begin the instructions of Narada to Dhruva. Now they go from 40, text 40 to, I think it's text 61. I kind of doubt we'll finish them all. Some long purports. But we'll, so maybe it will take us several days. But let's begin. So Dhruva Maharaj, first I'll give you briefly, I'll tell you what he's going to tell him. He's going to tell him, first of all, what he should do. And to gain what he wants. And what he should do is engage in devotional service. And that's the general instruction. Engage in devotional service. And then, how should one do that? He tells him to go to the Yamuna, to go to Vrindavan. And there, you sit down and you practice Astanga Yoga. Astanga Yoga also sometimes is known as Patanjali Yoga, or yoga which has, as it goes through the different steps, and we've heard about this quite a few times already. In the last canto we've heard about the teachings of Kapila Dev, where also he recommended yoga in the beginning of the second canto. There was in the, possibly the second chapter, there was a recommendation to practice Astanga Yoga, where one practices the rules and regulations, then the asanas, then the breathing exercises, pranayama, and then pratyahara, removes the sense objects from the mind, and learns fully to control his mind, and then practices dharan, dhyan, samadhi, the different stages of meditation upon the Lord, until one's able to focus his consciousness fully upon the Lord. So that's actually the purpose of Astanga Yoga. So Narada Muni recommends go to Vrindavan, go to the Yamuna River, and practice Astanga Yoga and meditate upon the Lord through your practices of Astanga Yoga. He also gives other instructions. One is to chant a mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, like the Hare Krishna mantra. Actually, that Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is a very important and powerful mantra, and it's mentioned right at the very beginning also of the second canto of the Bhagavatam. And here Dhruva Maharaj is given that mantra by Narada Muni. So go to Yamuna, go to Vrindavan, practice Astanga Yoga, meditate upon the Lord, and chant this mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and also worship the deity. Get a deity form of the Lord, a form of the Lord to worship, and then worship properly and meditate upon the Lord's incarnations and pastimes, and worship him. Even if there's no paraphernalia available, at least you can worship Krishna within your mind. And this practice, very quickly, if you do these things, it will give you everything that is available, depending upon what you want. Because Krishna is like a desire tree, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Yeyetam mam prapadyante tamstatayava bhajam yaham. That if we come to God in distress, artha gigyasa artati gyanicha bharatasava, if we come to him in distress, he will take away our distress. As we approach him, he will reciprocate with us. If we go to him wanting some material reward, some money or fame or wealth or position, or to remove this problem, distress again, and wealth, he will give us that. And if we have go to him either with dharma, artha, kama, moksha, ultimately if we go to him with the desire for freedom from the material world, he will give us that. And ultimately, the ultimate, is that if we don't desire anything from him, but if we just go to him with love, wishing to serve him, what will he give? We don't want anything, and he's reciprocating. What will he give? He will ultimately even give himself to a devotee who has no desire other than to please him. And that is called bhakti. That stage is called bhakti. And that is the final fruit of the Vedic literatures and the final fruit of all worship, bhakti. Do not ask for some, because after all, we can get material things in other ways. If we want fame, we don't have to go to God for fame. He has to sanction it, but other people can make us famous or wealthy or remove one problem or another problem. So why go to the Lord and ask for something that someone else can give? Why not get the greatest thing which no one else can give? And that is Krishna consciousness. But then again, on the other side, if we do have material desires, like Dhruva Maharaj, and like possibly all of us, or some of us, or most of us, then it is better to actually go to God. Because if we worship him and satisfy him, as we will find out with Dhruva Maharaj, all that will be cleared away. And we will end up, ultimately, if we are determined, with the best of all things. So those summarize the instructions of Narada, and then we will go through them now slowly. So first, go to the Yamuna, practice Ashtanga Yoga, meditate upon the Lord, chant mantras, worship the deity form, meditate on the Lord's form and pastimes, or somehow or another, even if we can only worship him in the mind, we don't need any paraphernalia, we can do that and he will satisfy everything. Okay, now we'll read text 40. So Dhruva has convinced Narada that he is the Lord. So Narada says, the instructions given by your mother, Suniti, to follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just suitable for you. You should therefore completely absorb yourself in the devotional service of the Lord. So these texts 40 and 41 explain the prime point that Dhruva should engage in devotional service. Any person who desires the fruits of the four principles, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, liberation, should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For worship of his lotus feet yields the fulfillment of all of these. So whatever we want, Krishna is the source of benediction for those things. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purports to those two verses. That was text 40 and 41, when Narada is telling him, engage in devotional service, regardless of your desires, but with that determination. So here's some of Prabhupada's purport to text 40. We'll start about a third of the way down. Both Suniti and Narada Muni knew that the demand of Dhruva Maharaj was impossible for any demigod to fulfill. And therefore both of them recommended following the process of devotional service to Lord Krishna. Narada Muni is referred to here as Bhagavan, because he can bless any person just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead can. He was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj, and he could have at once personally given whatever he wanted. But that is not the duty of the spiritual master. His duty, the spiritual master's duty, is to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. Krishna was similarly present before Arjuna, and even though he could have given him all facilities for victory over the opposing party without a fight, he did not do so. Instead, he asked Arjuna to fight. In the same way, Narada Muni asked Dhruva Maharaj to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired result. So a very interesting point that there is a process of devotional service, and that is, and usually we follow a process to get a result. And why do we follow the process? Because we want that result, and we're not actually interested in the process itself. It's just a means to get an end. But in devotional service, the process is the main thing, and we don't take our consciousness off the following of the process. And automatically the product or the result will come. But we tend to take what we call the fruit of mentality into the following of the process, that we're thinking, well, I'm doing it. Well, where's the result? Where's the exact result I want? I want that. It's not coming quick enough, or it is coming quick enough. I've got what I want, so I like it. Or the result that I wanted isn't coming, so I don't like it anymore. And we look at the process as simply a means, but actually the process of devotional service is devotional service, and it is not different from the end. It itself is bhakti. It is itself spiritual. And it is itself purifying. So practically speaking, the result of deep Krishna consciousness cannot be obtained until we are purified. So we tend to want the result without undergoing the devotional discipline. But it's impossible, actually impossible, to get the result of devotional service without the discipline, without the purification. Because devotional service requires a fully purified heart. Devotional service can only be manifest, love for Krishna can only be manifested in a pure heart. So even if we want to go to the spiritual world or go to Krishna Loka, if we want to be with Krishna and we can't until we have a pure heart and love Him. It's not possible. Because our desire to love Krishna in an immature stage will be basically selfish. And love of Krishna, actual love of Krishna, is selfless love. So it cannot manifest in an impure heart, practically speaking. So the heart has to be purified. So the duty of the spiritual master, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, is to engage and direct the disciple's engagement, not to bring the result exactly, but to direct the engagement of the disciple so that the heart will become purified. So there's two things that are going on. One is that the heart has to be purified, meaning that the impurities in the heart have to be removed. And the second, a very deep desire to love Krishna, with Krishna in the center, actual love of Krishna, has to grow. Shreya Karayava Chandrika Vitaranam. It has to grow like a lotus blossoms in the moonlight. That's the positive side of our spiritual life. It has to grow. So that's the cultivation of devotional service, the removal of the impurities in that. So Narada Muni asked Dhruva Maharaj to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired result. Because Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom, but Narada Muni wanted him to have something more wonderful than a kingdom, actually. Something much more wonderful. And we'll see at the end, Dhruva Maharaj will get his kingdom. But after having seen the Lord, due to that determination and due to the process that he, of devotional service that he engaged in, he, when he saw the Lord, he no longer wanted what he previously wanted so deeply and dearly. He saw that as just like pieces of glass, useless. So Narada Muni wanted something beyond for Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted something so far beyond what Dhruva Maharaj could even conceive of. There was no question of Dhruva Maharaj actually being able to conceive of what Narada Muni knew was the goal, what Dhruva Maharaj would ultimately get. It was inconceivable for him, for Dhruva at that time, but Narada knew and he engaged him accordingly. Text 41 from the purport. Narada Muni therefore advised that even for religiosity, economic development, sense gratification or liberation, one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offer prayers, and ask for the fulfillment of one's desires, a desire at the lotus feet of the Lord. That is real intelligence. An intelligent person never goes to demigods to pray for anything. He goes directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all benedictions. So this is not recommending that we go to God with material desire. It is in one sense. We should, Prabhupada is saying that if you have material desires, go to God for their satisfaction. But he's not saying that we should have material desires and then with our material desires we should think that God's business, that his purpose of existence is to supply our material desires like Santa Claus or something like that. He's not saying that. But what he is saying is that if we do have material desires, instead of going anywhere else to fulfill them, we go to God. Because if we do that, gradually those material desires will dissipate. We will get them fulfilled. We don't have to worry in that sense. We will get them fulfilled. But Krishna will fulfill them in such a way that we will realize their insignificance. And we will get something else as well. The heart will be purified at the same time. So very important instructions. And at the last paragraph of this purport, Narada Muni therefore advised Dhruva Maharaj to take shelter of Vasudev, Lord Krishna, and engage himself in the way that his mother had advised, for that would help him fulfill his desire. In this verse, Narada Muni has especially stressed the devotional service of the Lord as the only way. In other words, even if one is full of material desires, he can continue his devotional service to the Lord and all his desires will be fulfilled. Text 42. Now we're going to begin the process of explaining how to prosecute devotional service, execute it. My dear boy, he says, Tat tata gacchabhadram te yamunayas tatam suchi punyam madhuvanam yatra sanidham nityada hare. My dear boy, I therefore wish all good fortune to you. You should go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvan, and there be purified. Just by going there, one draws nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always lives there. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Both Narada Muni and Suniti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, advised Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now Narada Muni is especially giving him directions how this worship of the Supreme can be very quickly fructified. He recommends that Dhruva Maharaj go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a forest of the name Madhuvan, and begin his meditation and worship there. Places of pilgrimage yield a special advantage for a devotee in quickly advancing his spiritual life. Lord Krishna lives everywhere, but still it is very easy to approach him in holy places of pilgrimage, because these places are inhabited by great sages. Lord Krishna says that he lives wherever his devotees are chanting the glories of his transcendental activities. There are many places of pilgrimage in India, and especially prominent are Badri Narayan or Badrinath, Dwarka, Rameshwar, and Jagannath Puri. These sacred places are called Chardham or Four Dhams. So this is very famous in India, that there are four holy places that are on the four, the north, south, east, and west of India. In the north, there is Badrinath, the place where the Badrinarayan deity is. Very, very holy and special place. And in the east, there is Jagannath Puri. In the west, there is Dwarka. And in the south, there is Rameshwar. So these are all spiritual places. And Prabhupada's explaining that the special facility these holy places offer is that there are many devotees living there. And then, by associating with the devotees, one can hear Krishna Katha, and then Shushusha Sharadanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi. By serving them, one can gain a taste for Krishna Katha, for hearing about Krishna. And one wants the qualities that they have, the qualities of heart. So that's the facility that the holy places offer. Lord Krishna says that he lives wherever his devotees are chanting the glories of his transcendental activities. There are many places of pilgrimage in India, and especially prominent are Badri Narayan, Dwarka, Rameshwar, Jagannath Puri. These sacred places are called the Four Dhams. Dhamma refers to a place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Lord. To go to Badrinarayan, one has to pass through Haridwar on the path. That's what it literally means, on the path to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the gateway, Haridwara, the gateway to the Lord. Similarly, there are other holy places of pilgrimage, such as Prayag, Allahabad, and Mathura, and the topmost of all of them is Vrindavan. Unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he live in such holy places and execute devotional service there. But an advanced devotee like Narada Muni, who is engaged in preaching work, can serve the Supreme Lord anywhere. Sometimes he even goes to the hellish planets. Hellish conditions do not affect Narada Muni because he's engaged in greatly responsible activities in devotional service. So, apito yarte darshanam. For an advanced devotee, Narayana Paraksarve Nakutasjana Bibhiti, wherever he is equal to him and becomes a holy place, because he's always carrying Gadaraj. He's carrying the Lord who carries the club within his heart. Svantastena Gadaraj. He carries Krishna within his heart, so every place he is, he doesn't have to go to a holy place, he becomes a moving holy place, practically speaking. And we really saw this with Srila Prabhupada, that everywhere he was, he turned into a holy place with special, special, special sweetness. So for a holy person or advanced devotee, the externals of the place do not affect him. According to the statements of Narada Muni, Madhuvan, which is still existing in the Vrindavan area, is the district of, in the district of Mathura, is a most sacred place. Many saintly persons still live there and engage in the devotional service of the Lord. There are 12 forests in the area of Vrindavan, and Madhuvan is one of them. Pilgrims from all parts of India assemble together and visit all 12 of these forests. There are 5 forests on the eastern bank of the Yamuna, Badravan, Bilvavan, Loavan, Bandiravan, and Mahavan. On the western side of the bank of the Yamuna, there are seven: Madhuvan, Talavan, Kamudavan, Bahulavan, Kamyavan, Kandiravan, and Brindavan. Text 43, also continuing the instruction to go to the Yamuna. My dear boy, in the waters of the river Yamuna, which is known as the Kalindi, you should take three baths daily, because the water is very auspicious, sacred, and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Ashtanga Yoga, and then sit down on your asan, your sitting place, in a calm and quiet position. So he already knew, Dhruva Maharaj already knew how to practice Ashtanga Yoga. So he wasn't going to inform him of, and have him practice all the different aspects of Ashtanga Yoga. Dhruva Maharaj already knew, but he was just telling him to do it. And then also to bathe in the Yamuna so that one can become externally purified. That's the basic idea. Now in the next verses, all the way up to, I think it's 52 or so, it's going to describe the practice of yoga and how to, and what the goal of that yoga is and how to practice it. After sitting on your seat, practice the three kinds of breathing exercises. So the three kinds are the inhaling, the exhaling, and the holding of the breath. These are all the aspects of the pranayama. And thus, by practicing the three kinds of breathing, by controlling the life air, then, and this is what the purpose of the breathing exercises in Ashtanga Yoga are, by practicing that, one's mind becomes controlled. Because without controlling one's mind, the practice of yoga is very difficult. So the purpose of the breathing exercise, of the asanas, of the sitting postures, is to purify and make the body healthy, purify the body and make it healthy, and then one can properly practice pranayama or the breathing exercises. And then by practicing the breathing exercises, one can control one's mind in this mechanical way. And then the next step is to withdraw the mind from the objects of the senses. Because right now our mind, as soon as we pass something on the street or whatever, the mind just holds on to anything that it thinks it can enjoy. And it becomes attracted in that way. So when the mind is in the mood of enjoyment of the objects of the senses, how can it focus upon Krishna and devotion? Impossible. So therefore the mind has to be controlled. Otherwise no progress. So therefore he says, gradually control the life air, the mind, and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination. That means to rid oneself from this desire to exploit this world for my own petty, sensuous pleasures, as if the whole world was meant, it existed for me and to satisfy me. Such illusion. And everyone is walking around in that illusion. And that is the basic material contamination. And with great patience, begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is actually the goal of all this. The purification of the mind, the controlling of the mind, the everything. It's just ultimately meant to focus, to train the individual to focus his consciousness upon the Lord. So here is Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the entire yoga system is described in summary, and special stress is given to the breathing exercises for stopping the disturbing mind. And we can see how disturbing the mind is. Just try to control it. Even just for 1 minute, say, I will not think about anything except listen to exactly what's being said. Even for 30 seconds, even for 10 seconds, it's almost impossible for us, because we've been trained since we were kids to just let the mind, just its purpose is to do anything it wants, enjoy, exploit, go here, go there, wander all over the universe, think about this, think about today, yesterday, 10 years ago, this person, that person, anything, everything, one after another. So special stress is given to the breathing exercise for stopping the disturbing mind. The mind by nature is always oscillating. What does oscillating mean? Up and down and round and round. Yeah. For it is very fickle. In what sense is the mind fickle? What does fickle mean? Yeah, and right. It's always chanchala, always changing. But it's also, it's whimsical. Fickle means it's like whimsical. That it likes something, it focuses on something that it likes. But there's no reason. It just decides, I want. I like it. And then, just like that, in 5 minutes or in 10 minutes or a day or a week, the same thing that it loved, it gave its, it was forcing you to want, it has it can have a complete abhorrence for that very same thing in 5 minutes. So, this is practically speaking the basic problem that we all have in that which stops us from being happy in this world, is that we identify with the mind. So the mind wants something, it fixes on something, and suddenly we really want that thing. And then 2 minutes later, it hates that thing, and then we hate it. And we're just being, it's like being in a boat, in a, you know, a great storm, being rocked this way and that way. Due to the identification of this fickle, changing mind. So the breathing exercise is meant to control it. The process of controlling the mind might have been very possible in those days, millions of years ago, when Dhruva Maharaj took to it. But at the present moment, the mind, not by the control of the mind, not by using the breathing exercises, because that takes many, 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 many years to practice, and one has to be in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes the process of performing this, and one has to go to a secluded place. One can't live in the city. One has to go to a secluded place, live alone, very, very strict, etc. So no one can do this, and it takes so long. So in this day, at the present moment, the mind has to be fixed and controlled. How? Directly. It has to be fixed directly on the lotus feet of the Lord by the chanting process. Sankirtanam. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one immediately concentrates on the sound vibration and thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. And very quickly one is elevated to the position of samadhi, or trance. If one goes on chanting the holy names of the Lord, which are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally his mind becomes absorbed in thought of the Lord. It is recommended to Dhruva Maharaj that he meditate on the Supreme Guru or Supreme Spiritual Master. The Supreme Spiritual Master is Krishna, who is therefore known as Chaitya Guru. This refers to the super soul who is sitting in everyone's heart. He helps from within, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, and he sends the spiritual master who helps from without. The spiritual master is the external manifestation of the Chaitya Guru, or the spiritual master sitting in everyone's heart. The process by which we give up our thoughts of material things is called pratyahara, which entails being freed from all material thoughts and engagements. The word abhidhyayet, which is used in this verse, indicates that unless one's mind is fixed, one cannot meditate. The conclusion, therefore, is that meditation means thinking of the Lord within. Whether one comes to that stage by the Astanga Yoga system or by the method recommended in the Shastras, scriptures, especially for this present age, to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord, the goal is to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now After describing the yoga process, he's going to describe that one, that Lord, whom we should meditate, upon whom we should meditate. I think we'll read the next few verses, and there's just one half of one purport. So here's the description of the Lord who is in everyone's heart, upon whom everyone should meditate. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see him, he appears never to be displeased, and he is always prepared to award benediction to them. His eyes, his nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose, and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. Clearly, the ultimate truth is a person. He's not something ethereal, wispy, or impersonal. The Lord's form is always youthful. Every limb and every part of his body is properly formed, free from defect. His eyes and lips are pinkish like the rising sun. He is always prepared to give shelter to the surrendered soul. And anyone so fortunate as to look upon him feels all satisfaction. The Lord is always worthy to be the master of the surrendered soul, for he is an the ocean of mercy. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Srivats, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune, and his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers, and he is eternally manifest with four hands, which hold a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The entire body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is decorated. He wears a valuable jeweled helmet, necklaces, and bracelets. His neck is adorned with the Kastuba jewel, and he is dressed in yellow silk garments. The Lord is decorated with small golden bells around his waist, and his lotus feet are decorated with golden ankle bells. All his bodily features are very attractive and pleasing to the eyes. He is always peaceful, calm, and quiet, and very pleasing to the eyes and the mind. Real yogis meditate upon the transcendental form of the Lord as he stands on the whirl of the lotus of their hearts, the jewel-like nails of his lotus feet glittering. The Lord is always smiling, and the devotees should constantly see the Lord in this form as he looks very mercifully towards the devotee. In this way, the meditator should look towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all benedictions. One who meditates in this way, concentrating his mind upon the always auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination, and he does not come down for meditation upon the Lord. So, one should meditate on the Lord, who is a person, who is all attractive and all beautiful. We'll just read one paragraph of Prabhupada's purport to 46, and then we'll stop. Because in this verse, described in 46, the verse itself described that he's always prepared to give shelter to the surrendered soul. So within that is a with the seed concept that because everyone in this world needs shelter, that because we are more or less lost in this world, and although we may feel secure, that's secure by gaining family or wealth or position or something like that, but security is illusory and it will be crushed. So everyone actually needs shelter, and Krishna gives shelter. So Prabhupada's, the first paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Everyone has to surrender to someone superior. That is always the nature of our living condition. At the present moment, we are trying to surrender to someone, either to society or our nation, family, state, or government. Nowadays, people don't like to surrender to their society, nation, family, state, or government. People like to surrender to what? To their own minds, basically. Just, I want to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, because I want to do it. And I am fully surrendered to me, to my mind. But so the point the Prabhupada is making is surrendering always exists. We must be surrendering. The surrendering process already exists. but it is never perfect because the person or institution unto whom we surrender is imperfect. And our surrender, having so many ulterior motives, is also imperfect. As such, in the material world, no one is worthy to accept anyone's surrender, nor does anyone fully surrender to anyone else unless obliged to do so. But here the surrendering process is voluntary, and the Lord is worthy to accept the surrender. The surrender by the living entity automatically occurs as soon as he sees the beautiful youthful nature of the Lord. So surrender is the most natural thing for the living entity, actually. But it has to be voluntary, and it has to be given to the right person, who is Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. It's interesting how, because we haven't had a class in quite a few weeks, and it's hard to get the mind in the habit to that I'm going to sit and listen for an hour. To sit and listen for an hour, that's not easy. Even in, I recently saw a church Sunday program somewhere in Melbourne. I happened to see one, and to keep people's interest up, and that's only one day a week, they had five people giving five 10-minute sermons broken up by singing and this and that, or maybe it was four people and sometimes two people would speak, to give some variety and everything like that. So all those things considered, and how hard it is to control the mind, you all did quite well. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Even though we don't have any time for any? Yeah.
I just recently heard that four pious people surrender to Krishna and four impious people surrender to Krishna.
Four, that's the verse, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam. That's the pious people surrender to Krishna. There's four that surrender to Krishna, and they are Sukritino. They are pious. And then there's Namam Duskritino Mudha. There are four impious people, four kinds of people who don't surrender to Krishna. So an impious person cannot surrender, and an impious person has to become pious.
So there's eight people altogether, eight types?
That's what's described in this type of analysis, eight different types. Okay. So tomorrow we'll continue, starting in text 53, and see if we can make it to 61, which is the end of Narada Muni's instruction. So far he's told him, practice devotional service. You'll get what you want. And first you should go to the Amuna, Vrindavan, because it's a holy place. And you should practice Astanga Yoga for the purpose of meditating upon Krishna, fixing the mind upon Krishna. And we'll hear the rest of the instructions. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Dhruva Maharaj ki jai. Narada Muni ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.